Great. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So we're up to Kapitel Yud Gimel. Let's just take a couple of moments. We'll go through it. Lamnatzeach Mizmor LeDavid. To the conductor, a song of David. Ad Ana Hashem Tishkacheni Netzach. How long will HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will you forget me forever? Ad Ana Tastir Espanecha Mimeni. How long will you hide your face from me? Ad Ana Ashis Etzos Benafshi. Yogon Bilbavi Yomam Ad Ana Yarum Oivi Alai. How long will I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart by day? How long will my enemy have the upper hand over me? Pasuk Dalet. Habita anini Hashem Elokai, ha'ira einai pen ishan ha'maves. Look and answer me, O Lord my God. Enlighten my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Pasekei pen yomar oivi yechaltiv tzara yagilu ki emot. Lest my enemies say I have overwhelmed him, my adversaries will rejoice when I totter. Last pasek, v'ani bechastecho batachti yageli bibi shuasecha. Ashur la Hashem ki gamal alai. But I trusted in your loving kindness. My heart will rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, for he has bestowed it upon me. So at first glance, this kapitel really seems to continue in the theme of the previous kapitlach of difficulty, suffering, challenge. What's the context? If you take a look at number two, so the Radak writes, Lamatzeach Mizmor LeDavid, Zeha Mizmor Omru David Be'ez Shahaya Bitsara Me'oivav. David HaMelech wrote this particular kapitel when he was in a state of difficulty as a result of suffering from his enemies. Now, which enemies? David HaMelech has no shortage of enemies, as we've already seen, right, over our past number of shiurim. So whether it's a reference to the time that he was running from Shaul, whether it's during one of the rebellions, whether it's during one of the difficulties with his child, the ongoing difficulties that David HaMelech has, as we spoke about in our last shiur, or last couple of shiurim, as a result of the episode with Bathsheba. So the Radak says, this could just be one of those generic suffering psalms, right, that David HaMelech wrote at some point in time during his life. But interestingly enough, as opposed to some of the which are actually linked to a particular life event, the Radak doesn't see any kind of real reference here to any specific episode, but rather just general suffering. Oh, but look at number two. Oh, ne'emar aloshon hagolus. Or perhaps it's not really stated in reference to David HaMelech's personal suffering, but rather what? Another one of the Psalms that represents exile. Exile, Golos, we've already seen a number of times that although David HaMelech himself also does experience some degree of personal exile, remember we've seen a couple of episodes of that, especially when he's on the run from Shaul, when he's on the run during the revolt, during the rebellion of Avshalom, but this could also be, says Radak, referring to national exile. David HaMelech himself, although he never experiences the exile of the Jewish people, prophetically he understands that such a process is going to occur, and therefore he writes some of these kapitel that refer to the future pain of the Jewish people. And the Radak says, I think the second approach is the appropriate approach. Namely, that the essence of this kapitel is about Golos, is about exile. And then, of course, if you go back and you look at number one, it really fits in. Because what is the essence of the kapitel? The essence of the kapitel is feeling forgotten, feeling forsaken. How it is that the Jew who relies on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we had this actually one of our earlier kapitlach, actually in Kapitel Yud Beis, of Nudi Harchem Ketzipor, this feeling that the rock of our salvation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is supposed to be so dependable, supposed to be always there, how sometimes we feel in Golos, we feel so forsaken, we feel so alone. And that's how he opens up. Ad on Hashem Tishkacheni Netzach. How did you forget me? How did you forget about me? And then he goes on to explain how our enemies triumph over us all the time. If you take a look at number three, so the Malbim writes, Lam Natzeach, Tfila LaHashem. So, of course, we've already encountered this dynamic, which is a little bit strange. How Lam Natzeach means, write a song to the conductor. So when we think about songs, we generally think about happiness, right? The song, we usually associate the song with joy. And here it's a little bit strange, because Lam Natzeach means, David, we think we're about to get a beautiful ode, a beautiful song. Ad Ana Hashem Tishkacheni Netzach. And David HaMelech launches into a lament. So write the Malbim, Tfila LaHashem. This is a prayer to God. Bayishkacheu ubayastir panav mimenu. This is a prayer to Hashem, a proactive tefillah, says the Malbim. God, don't forget us. Don't forget us. And he writes over here, "Bishnei mine azivos v'astaras ponim asheikra lachot." Okay, so we'll leave that on the side for just a moment. So according to the Radak and the Malbim, what Kapitel Yud Gimel is really talking about is the experience of the Jew in the diaspora. And again, as I've mentioned a number of times, you know, Baruch Hashem, it is hard for us to relate to this type of idea, because the truth is, somewhat often we actually forget the fact that we're in Galus. Right? But we are in Galus. It's just the difference is that Baruch Hashem, we live in a time without the active suffering, at least the day-to-day suffering, that Jews throughout 2,000 years had to experience. But David HaMelech, when he speaks out the Galus experience, he seeks out difficulty, he seeks out challenging, and there are two dominant themes. One is the fact that our enemies always seem to have the upper hand, and number two, the fact that we feel forgotten by God. Now, it's interesting, by the way, that these two concepts are mentioned side by side. Because the fact that our enemies have the upper hand, that causes us actual acute pain. What's interesting is, the truth is, we know from an emotional perspective, there's no more hurtful feeling than when you feel forgotten by someone who you love. Right? If someone who is supposed to care about you, you can fill in the blank, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a parent, whether it's a child, whether it's a friend, whatever it might be, someone who's supposed to care about you does not care about you, or you feel they don't care about you, it's an incredible source of pain. So emotionally painful that it could actually be equivalent to what? The harshest of physical pains as well. So here David HaMelech is referring to two things, emotional pain, physical pain, and both are difficult. And interestingly enough, amazingly enough, which one does David HaMelech begin with? Emotional pain, right? He doesn't begin by speaking about the enemies. He begins by speaking about Adana Hashem Tishkacheni Netzach. You've forgotten about me. You've forgotten about me, but you love me. If you love me, then how can you forget about me? Well, if you forget about me, then that calls into question the entire love you have for me. Which, of course, this dynamic that David HaMelech is describing is the dynamic that all of us struggle with when we undergo suffering. We spoke about this in Kapitel Lamed a little bit. This idea that even if a person is saved from their suffering, they're still left with the lingering question of why did I have to go through it to begin with? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if my enemies are vanquishing over me, if I'm still stuck in the dark night of exile, I have to ask, what does that say about your feelings for me? Well, I'll tell you how it makes me feel. It makes me feel like you don't love me. And if you don't love me, then it makes me feel like I have been forgotten. So David HaMelech discusses the emotional pain of Galus, the physical pain of Galus, all intertwined in one kapitel. If you look at number four, the Malbim here says something absolutely amazing. He says, Adana, let's read this inside. It's a little bit technical, but you'll see it's quite interesting. He says, Adana, ha'avon yisaviv lepamim shichacha, ulepamim yisaviv hastaras panim. So writes the Malbim that sin could cause one of two dynamics. Shichacha, divine forgetfulness, hastaras panim, hester panim, literally a shielding of the divine countenance, or hiding of the divine countenance. Hashichacha, hu eis higdil b'cheit kokach, ad shi yisalik Hashem hashgachoso, mikol v'kol, v'az lo yetiv lo, v'lo yira, achu masur el ha-mikra bal inyorav. So the first level says the Malbim is shichacha. What's shichacha? Shichacha is that when a person or when a people, David HaMelech is speaking really in general, in national terms, when the Jewish people forget God to such a degree that what? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgets about us. That He forgets about us. What does that mean that He forgets about us? He absolutely withdraws. Absolutely withdraws. Now what happens when God withdraws? What happens? What happens? One word. Mikra. Mikra means what? Mikra means randomness. Now, random could be bad, random could be good. It's exactly what the word says. It's random. It's random. When the Jewish people don't do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants them to do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm out of here. I don't want, you know, the Gemara Masechet Sota brings down, the Gemara that talks about gaiva, talks about arrogance, that there are certain midos, there are certain attributes. You know, in general, One more tangent on the tangent. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos brings down that in general, and this is so prevalent for today's issues, in general, the right path in life is what? What the Rambam calls the Derech HaMamutza, the middle path. The middle path, extremism, is never condoned in Judaism. Of course, the middle is, of course, subject to much dispute. Whose middle is middle? Okay, but leaving that aside, the Rambam says that the Derech HaMamutza and Derech HaYishar, that the middle path in life, you're supposed to find a path of moderation in anything and everything you do in existence. But there are certain exceptions. What are the exceptions? A couple of midos where you have to be an extremist. For example, the Rambam says, anger. Anger is an exceptionally destructive character trait. And so a person shouldn't be a middle of the roader, you know, anger. But a person should be an extremist in avoiding anger. In avoiding anger. That even things that maybe you have the right to get angry about, you should absolutely avoid at all costs. Why? Because we know. Because we've all, I'm sure none of you have, but I have gotten angry. And when you get angry, so what happens? Anger is a very dangerous midah because you lose control. The Gemara says that whoever gets angry, it's like you worship Avodah Zarah. So what's the pshat? Because when you get angry, you totally lose control. You totally lose control over yourself to the point that you could end up engaging in many, many different things. The other one the Gemara says is gaiva. It's gaiva, arrogance. The Gemara in Sota comes along and says, but you have to have a little bit of arrogance. The Gemara says that a Talmid Chacham is supposed to have a Shminis Shebish Shminis. A Talmid Chacham is supposed to have 1/64th of a measure of arrogance. Now, it's not just the Talmud Chacham, the Maharsha comments. Every person is supposed to have a tiny little bit of arrogance, because if you don't have any bit of arrogance, then what? You have no self-worth. If a person, right, posit good arrogance means, I know that I'm special. I know that I'm a good person. I know that I shouldn't be trampled over. I know that I'm not a welcome mat. I know that I am someone who is special. If you don't have any of that, then you're just a shmata, and that's obviously problematic. But the Gemara says that someone who has too much gaiva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, there's not enough room in the world for me and him. For me and him. An amazing statement, right? We know. Truth is, if you've ever been in the room with a person with an exceptionally inflated ego, so you feel like there's no room to stand because that person is occupying all of the space. That's what Kadosh Baruch Hu says about the Baal Gaiva. So why is this important? Because the Malbim says that there is the ability to sin to such a degree that a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I can't be here anymore. I can't be in this space. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He just simply removes himself. Shichacha. He forgets about us. He forgets about us. Now what happens at that moment that he forgets about us, says the Malbim? So again, Va'az lo yeti v'lo yara. So God's not going to do good for us, and he's not going to punish us either. HaKadosh Baruch Hu simply, he's misalik himself. He simply removes himself, and therefore when God removes himself, remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls everything. If God removes his control, there is a universal autopilot. The universal autopilot is randomness. Just whatever happens, happens. There are certain processes that are built into the universe. I'll keep it going. Yes. So the answer is that no, some of it is programmed into the world. I mean, everything always comes from God. But you know, as much as you know, the Zohar brings down that every single breath a person takes because of Kadosh Baruch Hu, the truth is one can make the argument that God set up certain processes in the world. And the processes in the world, there are certain biological processes also that work. They only work because God allows it to work, but they work. To the point that even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't want to be associated with them, shichacha, I want to remove myself, those processes will still continue uninterrupted. What other processes may set in, what else the randomness may bring, who knows? That's called shichacha. Achu maser ala mikra balinyanav. So in the shichacha, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgets about us and removes himself from us, we are subject to the laws of randomness. V'hastaras panim. So then that's first stage. That's called shichacha, divine forgetfulness. The other stage, v'hastaras panim. Now what's the second stage? Hester panim. Now hester panim literally means, see, here's what's interesting about this Malbim is, people often assume that hester panim is what we just described in shichacha. Right, that the hiding of the divine countenance is when God removes us. Says the Malbim, no. Shichacha is shichacha. Shichacha is when God forgets about us. Yes.
I don't know that word. Help me.
Forgetfulness.
Forgetfulness.
Divine forgetfulness. God forgets about us.
And say it in Hebrew again.
Shin chaf ches hey. Shichicha. Shichicha. Good, I got the chaz in there. All right, so now the second level, says the Malbim, is hastaras panim. What's hester panim? Who be'ez sheyashkia Hashem alav la'anisho alavono she'az eno shachuach itzel ha'ashkoch ha'alyona rak she'ha'onesh ha'ashkochi hazeh ne'elam v'nistar be'emtsam tevayim. Says the Malbim, you know what hester panim is? Hester panim is when God is very much present. But what? But what? He hides himself. So therefore, I, the individual, think that God has left the building, but in reality, he's still very much present. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still pulling all of the strings. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still organizing everything. But I have difficulty seeing the Yad Hashem, seeing the hand of God in what is unfolding. So amazingly enough, here's what's interesting about these two stages is, they probably look the same to the individual. Both look like the absence of God. Just the difference is that Shichacha is the real absence of God versus Hester Panim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very much present. Yes? What would you say? No doubt, Shichacha is worse. The concept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has fully removed... See, there's one... You know, for a young child, when you have to punish a young child... So a young child gets very upset because they're getting hurt by the parents. But as the child matures, the child knows that even though the parents hurt me, however the parents hurt me, the parent is there, the parent is present, and the parent loves me. So in Hester Panim, even if we're getting the Patshim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to know at least that God is there is in and of itself comforting. But the notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has left, the notion that God is gone and is not playing any active role in my circumstances, and I'm totally left to the winds of chance, to the winds of Mikra, is horrifying. Yeah?
So I'm having a hard time putting my head around the Shichacha, because we would never know if it was Shichacha.
Right, correct. That's what I mentioned. So, to us, it would be...
Does it make any difference?
Well, I'll tell you what it... Right. Well, I think what the Malbim would say is they play out themselves, meaning when there is a Hester Panim state, there is still a sense of order. Even if there's suffering, the feeling of randomness is not there.
Sometimes we don't know that. 100%?
The point over here is not for us to be able to know which state is which. The Malbim is highlighting for us that these two states of existence exist. How you would tell which one is which if you are in the midst of it? No idea. But again, that's not the Malbim's operative point. You'll see why he's saying this. Take a look. Finish the Malbim. He says the following. He says, if you look at the last two lines, Al harishon hispalel ad ona Hashem tishkacheni netzach va'al hashini hispalel ad ana tastir espanecha mimeni. So says the Malbim, why is he bringing this up now? Because David HaMelech is proactively supplicating to God for salvation from these two states. If you go back up to number one, what does David HaMelech say? Ad ona Hashem tishkacheni netzach. Tishkacheni is what? Shichacha. How long will you forget about us? What is David HaMelech referring to? We're God. There are times in life where you're gone. It's not the fact that we just can't feel you. You're not here. You're not present. So how long will you allow that state to go on? And then, ad ana tastir espanecha mimeni. And how long will you allow a state of hester panim, of where you are present, but we can't even actually tell that you're here or not? How long will you allow that to go on? So says the Malbim, David HaMelech, when speaking about the Golos experience, speaks about the two most horrific states. Shichacha ad ana Hashem tishkacheni. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally leaves us. Again, it's It's a horrifying thought, if you think about it, because the truth is, the only way we make it through the day is the belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is by our side, supporting us. The notion that somehow you have to face life, and you have to live life totally alone, without any level of divine support, is literally horrifying. So David HaMelech says, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how long will you subject us to the state of Shechacha? Ad ana tastir espanacha imeni, and how long will you allow Hester upon him to go on? Yes. So I'll tell you like this, there are many, everyone agree, I should say everyone, many agree with the concept of Shechacha, except that they call Shechacha Hester Panim. Meaning, the Malbim comes up with these two models of Shechacha and Hester Panim. Many discuss the idea that what Hester Panim means, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not present. Interestingly enough, the Malbim's definitions really work very beautifully. Because, for example, the concept of Hester Panim comes from where? Right? It's actually in the Tochacha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in the Tochacha, in the Psukim that discuss the different curses, V'hanochi hastir astir espanai mehen. I will go ahead and I will hide my face. So, interestingly enough, the Gemara Maseches Megillah, says, Esther min haTorah minayin. How do we know? Chazal often do this, where they like to find scriptural or biblical allusions to post-biblical events. So where do we find a hint to Esther Hamalka in the Torah? So what pasuk does the Gemara quote? V'hanochi hastir astir espanai mehen. So therefore, the Gemara saying is that the story of Esther is a story of Hester Panim. Now, if you go with that definition, is God present? Of course. That's the whole point of Megillas Esther. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now again, does the onlooker know that God is present? No. It looks like God has left the building. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is nowhere to be found. We, the reader, know that although God is obscured from regular vision, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind the scenes orchestrating each and every step. So there is a fundamental dispute. So the Malbim is unique in that he breaks this up into two states. Shechacha, God is gone. Hester Panim, God is here, but obscured. When you look in most Jewish philosophical works that speak about Hester Panim, there's a fundamental dispute as to how you define Hester Panim. The Gemara clearly defines Hester Panim as God is present, but his involvement is obscured. Others say that no, Hester Panim means what the Malbim calls Shechacha, that God has actually left and he's nowhere to be found. So, the Malbim hasn't cornered the market on its definition. I think this Malbim is very profound because the Malbim is the only one that I know of who gives these two definitions to these two distinct states. Yes?
So
these are to the klal. These are not to individuals. That's why, by the way, the Radak, in number 2, even though he stated that this capital could be referring to David HaMelech's own personal suffering, at the end of the day, he says that it really refers to Golos, which works much better. This is a national capital. Individuals don't experience Hester Panim, and this is a very important point, Hester Panim, Sheikh according to the Malbim, are things that happen to the Klal, not things that are visited upon the individual. That being said, not our topic, but now because of your question, I will mention it, right? So, Rav Soloveitchik explains in his Sefer Al HaTshuva the concept of kares, right? We know that there are certain averos that carry with them kares. So kares is a very strange punishment in that we don't exactly know what it is. We call it spiritual excommunication. We call it, so the Gemara gives certain things that happen to a person who is in a state of kares, but the Gemara also acknowledges that certain things that are said to that particular individual also happen to people who are not in a state of kares. So Soloveitchik explains very, very profoundly that kares is personal Hester Panim. This idea of kares is that a person is cut off from God. And now, again, but when a Rav uses Hester Panim, I don't mean to be confusing, what he's actually referring to is the Malbim Shechacha. That there are certain situations where a person, a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm cutting myself off from you. I don't have anything to do with you anymore. Actually, the Maharal writes along the same lines, Rav Kook writes, the Rav writes, this idea that if a person has perpetual difficulty feeling connected with God, a person has to chas v'shalom be choshesh that maybe they're in a state of kares. I'm not talking about a person struggling to find me. A person really feels just they have no shaychus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no connection to God. God forbid what that state can mean. Can you get out of kares? Of course you can get out of kares. But so there is the potential for an individual state of hester panim called kares, but that's not what the capital is referring to over here. Yes. There will be other kapitlach that talk about that. There will be. What the Malbim, the single here, what David HaMelech is describing over here, is an actual state. It's not a feeling. It's not that David HaMelech feels disconnected from God. What David HaMelech is proactively lamenting is the fact that there will be times throughout history where HaKadosh Baruch Hu will leave us.
But don't we always, often, feel that way?
So, we can often feel in a state of hester panim. That's correct. Where God is here, but I don't feel like you're here. I know conceptually that you're here, but I don't feel like you're close. What David HaMelech is now describing is there's another state called Shechecha, where Kadosh Baruch Hu actively leaves.
Truly?
Truly. You can take it up with the Malbim. You can take it up. Mrs. Edelman, you're an incredible optimist. Baruch Hashem. I think that there are times throughout our history where such horrific and brutal things have occurred that it is impossible to imagine that God was present, because the mere presence of the Shekhinah should have prevented those things from occurring. And therefore, the only philosophically that it's understood is the absence of the Shekhinah. Wherever the Shekhinah is, by definition, there is an inherent Kedusha. There is certain depravity and evil that can't exist in the presence of the Shekhinah. And therefore, again, it's a little bit circular logic. If it does exist, it must mean that what? That the Shekhinah is not present. Look, this is how Rabbi Dr. Norman Lam, has an incredible essay about the Holocaust, Reflections of the Holocaust, where he discusses the idea that he spends a good part of the essay, it should be mandatory reading because it's very, very profound, but he writes that he discusses all the different philosophical schools of thought about the Holocaust. So he wrote that there were certain ranking Haredi Hasidic leaders who said the Holocaust happened because of Zionism. And other from the Zionist camps who said the Holocaust happened because people didn't go to Eretz Yisrael. And then there are others that say because the Jews weren't frum enough, or the Jews were this. And Rabbi Lam's whole point is that when it comes to a concept of hester panim, when you see that something is so broken that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to remove himself from it, those reasons are beyond the comprehension of man. For God to engage, for God to allow the process of shichacha to occur, he calls it hester panim, there's something beyond the scope of human comprehension that's unfolding over here. Okay. Yes. Say a little bit louder, I'm sorry. It could be. I would agree. Meaning, there's no question that, remember, the Malbim, as we always do with God, is employing anthropomorphic terms. Because obviously, could God ever forget? Meaning, you understand that there's a philosophical inconsistency with this whole idea. Because one of the pillars of our Emunah is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu occupies every bit of space in the universe. So then how could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not here? How could it be that the all-knowing, omniscient God forgets? So obviously what the Malbim is describing are processes as we could relate to them. What it actually means on the level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, beyond our comprehension. Yes?
Sorry, it's just very, very difficult concept. I'm sort of like shattering my all my...
I'm sorry. You could look at the second line of number 4 again. He says, Ad sheyisalek Hashem hashgachaso mimenu mikol vakol. Va'az lo yetiv lo v'lo yira lo. The Malbim is very explicit in what he's referring to over here. Now again, you're partially right in that, remember, even in the shichicha state, shichicha does not prevent man from going and seeking out God. Right? I could go find the Kaddish Baruch Hu if I choose to. But the point over here is that, yes, and I agree with you, it's a very scary state that God is literally removing his hashgacha, any level of divine providence or involvement, from my life. Right? When I told you that I think it's a horrific thing, it's not a guzmah, it's no exaggeration. This is an incomprehensible state of human existence, of being simply living in the world of randomness. Yeah? Okay, so, yes. Right. But Chamas Keri is exactly this lashon of Mikra. Right. Oh, so you're saying to the Malbim. Right. Very important point. It's an excellent point. Right. Then the Tochacha, so everybody hears in the Tochacha, the Torah itself uses this lashon of that I will walk with you with Keri, with Mikra. With mikro, with happenstance. So you want to say that even the Malbim is not being such a mechadish, she's just simply creating categories to that which is already described in the Torah. Excellent point. Okay, so the kapitel obviously begins in a very dramatic, very imposing state, describing these two states of alienation from God, shichicha and hester panim. What's amazing, of course, is when you come to number 5, which is the last pasuk in the kapitel, the tone totally shifts. V'ani b'chastecha batachti yageli b'bishuasecha ashir la Hashem kigamal alai. So it's almost like a split personality, right? In the first 5 psukim, David HaMelech has been lamenting, has been scared stiff about shechecha and about hester panim. David HaMelech is saying that our enemies always succeed over us, and then he says, "But I trust in your chesed. I trust in your loving kindness. Yageli b'bishuasecha. My heart will rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, for He has bestowed it upon me." Now, what's interesting about this is the following: Ashir la Hashem ki gamal alai is what tense? Right? It's right. At most you could get it as present past. Right? So here's what's strange about this kapitel. David HaMelech is telling us about all the difficulties, but then what is he saying? I'm going to sing to you. Why? Because you have already taken care of me. So that's the pshat. If you've already taken care of me, then leave us alone with the first 5 psukim, because you've already been saved. If he hasn't yet taken care of you, then what exactly are you singing about? So take a look at number 5. The Rebbe Yitzchak of Berdichev number 6, has a beautiful insight here, and he writes the following. He says, "Zeh ma she'amar David HaMelech b'nei Hashem, kol ha'olam smeich, kol ha'olam smeichim, rak la'achar she'Hashem onelem." The way people normally work when it comes to God is, when do people give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? After God has already done the great thing. Let's turn the page. "Aval anachnu am Yisrael, b'nei Avram Yitzchak v'Yakov, ve'arbo imos hakidoshos, etzlenu kol kach shone. Anachnu yodim, betuchim umargishim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ya'azor lanu. Anachnu yodim bevados shashem makshiv letfilasenu." If there is one word, if there is one trait that characterizes the Jewish people, it is optimism, hope. Hope. That this is what keeps us alive. That we believe that at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always going to take care of us. So watch Rav Levi Yitzchak writes. So that's the pshat. "V'ani b'chastecha batachti, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I believe in your chesed. Ani boteach becha, ribono shel olam. V'ani yodea, ani yodea shetislach li. I know you will forgive me. Ani yodea shetazor li atakin hakol. I know you will help me fix everything. Ani yodea shetitin l'shona tova. V'lachin, afilu lifnei kein, afilu lifnei shetazor li v'toshia, shetefra kodesh baruch hu. Even before you do anything for me, yagel libi b'shuasecha. I already rejoice in your salvation. Ani kvar sameach b'yeshuasecha. So Levi Yitzchak says something, David HaMelech says something absolutely astounding. Ani b'chastecha batachti. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the end of the day, the only way we make it through life as a people is because we believe that what? That everything will be okay. We believe with all of our collective heart that some way, somehow, Yeshua Krova Lovo, that salvation is always near. But it's not just that. Yogel Libi B'Shuasecha. I am so confident about the future salvation that what? That what? That what? I can already begin to celebrate it now. Even before it, bless you, even before it actually occurred, I'm so confident in its arrival that Yogeli Bibishosaka past tense, I can feel as if salvation has already arrived, even though it has not yet arrived. So intense is the Jewish sense of hope, so intense is the Jewish sense of optimism, that we begin to celebrate salvation even before salvation has yet to flourish. Now, that's why David HaMelech Dafka goes ahead and phrases this in past tense. Because I believe that Yeshua will come, I celebrate it as if it has already come. It is. Yes, but whatever we do nationally, you can always apply personally as well. Leaving aside Shechecha and Hester Panim. You could apply all these. The capital is phrased nationally. That is correct. But the dynamics are the same personally. David HaMelech is saying over here that what gets a person through the difficult times in life is a sense of optimism, a sense of hope. What David HaMelech is saying is, and it's a profound idea, that really the way to weather difficult periods in life is to be able to seize upon future salvation and take a little piece of it and bring it into the present to generate a sense of present hope and salvation. That's the goal in life. That if the Jew operates with the idea that somehow, some way, everything is going to be okay, everything is going to be all right, so I'm seizing on my future salvation and using it to generate present optimism. Now, the reason why this is exceptionally difficult is because it's difficult. So take a look at number 7. Take a look at number 7. I'll just bring you a raya, just so you see how this seems to fly in the face of human nature. So this is going, we're fast-forwarding a little bit into Sefer Shmos. So, you know, you have to understand, it's important. Sometimes, I'll tell you from a rabbi's perspective, so sometimes, you know, you have an idea, you have a drasha, you have a concept that you think is life-altering. Life-altering. And you get ready to go ahead and share it with your audience, and you pashtuns feel like Mashiach is going to come because people are just going to be so, so overwhelmed by this concept. And you say it with passion and with power, and what happens? Right? The person, you know, sitting right in front of you. Right? That's like, you know, and you say, oh my gosh, like, If you could snort through this, then mamish, I don't know what to do. So why am I saying this? Moshe Rabbeinu receives his first drasha from the Ribono Shel Olam. Right, Kadosh Baruch Hu at the Sne gives him the exact words that he is. This was the Geula speech. This is the redemption speech. And again, you would assume that God gives you your lines. You're golden. You would assume that these words are mamish going to penetrate the hearts of every single Jew that's there. And this speech, of course, we know it's very important to us because we use it every single year in our Seder. Look at number 7. Lachin emor livnei Yisrael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs Moshe Rabbeinu, tell the Jewish people the following. Ani Hashem, I am God. V'hotzeisi eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim, I will take you out. And again, these are the Arba Lashon Shogu, the four expressions of redemption. Ahotzeisi, I will take you out. Hitzalti, I will save you. Ga'alti, I will redeem you. Lakachti, I will take you to me as a people. So Moshe Rabbeinu comes and he gives this drasha. And what does he expect? He expects the people to start packing because they're going to be so inspired by this message of freedom that mamish, they're going to be ready. We're going to Eretz Yisrael. Let's go. And what's their response? If you take a look at the last line in number 7, the last pasuk says, "Va'idaber Moshe kinel b'nei Yisrael." Moshe Rabbeinu said the spies gave the drasha. V'lo shamu el Moshe. They didn't even listen. Mikotze ruach umeavod kasha. Now again, the Torah tells us it's not they weren't sleeping, they weren't uninterested, but simply they were unable to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. Mikotze ruach, shortness of breath, avod kasha, too much work. So what's the pshat? What's the pshat? We would assume, if we put ourselves in their place, we would assume that if Moshe Rabbeinu comes bearing the message of God, that people will be doing backflips over this. This is amazing. After 210 years of intense, back-breaking, emotionally breaking suffering, servitude, we're going free and we have a beautiful destiny in front of us. So why can't they absorb this message? So look at number 8. The Malbim, the Meshech Chachma writes over here the following idea. He says, Vagdaber Moshe El Bnei Yisrael, Lo Shema Moshe, Mikol Tzeruach, Perish, Inyon Havo'ol Yeret Yisrael, Mikol Tzeruach, Omeavod Akasha. Ki Derech Koshi Yom Asher Yachpotsu Lishmoa Rak Kedei Lotzeis Mitzarasam, Velo Lishmoa Bahavtachos Asidos, O Bahatzlachos Niflos. So the Meshech Chachma here says something amazing. He says that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't just speak about redemption from servitude. What else does Moshe Rabbeinu speak about? He speaks about being brought to Eretz Yisrael. So says the Meshech Chachma something amazing. Says the Meshech Chachma something amazing. They were with Moshe Rabbeinu. You're going to take us out of Egypt. Great. You're going to release us from our servitude. Wonderful. The moment that Moshe Rabbeinu begins to speak about Eretz Yisrael, the moment that he begins to speak about a bright and brilliant future, is the moment that the people say, we don't even know what you're talking about. Why, says the Meshech Chachma? Because we've spoken about this concept before. When a person is suffering, the only thing they could possibly see is what? Is an end to their physical or emotional pain. They can't envision any bigger or brighter future past that. If you tell me that my pain is going to end, if you tell me that my suffering is going to end, I could hear that. If you tell me that my pain is going to end, my suffering is going to cease, and I'm going to have a bright and beautiful future, I don't know what you're talking about. I can't absorb that message now. Why? Because all of my emotional energy is invested in what? Surviving. Surviving. Right now I have to survive. You're going to tell me I'm going to survive? You're going to tell me I'm going to live? I'm going to stop suffering? I hear it. You tell me I'm going to have something more beautiful in life? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. It's the same way that sometimes the worst thing you could do, I think I mentioned this in the past, when people try to comfort someone who's suffering, right? Whether it's an avel or someone else, and they mean well, but they say, you know what, one day you're going to see, you're going to be happy again, and everything's going to be fine, and you're going to rebuild your life. Don't say it. Don't ever say it. Because a person can't absorb that information. When a person is suffering, they can only see as far as to the cessation of their suffering. Most people, there are certain exceptions, most people can't see beyond the cessation of physical or emotional pain. So when Moshe Rabbeinu has them, as long as he's talking about the cessation of servitude, the moment that he speaks about the new destiny, living in Eretz Yisrael, the people say, Lo Shama Moshe, we can't even hear this particular message. So why is this important? Why is this important? Because generally, this is the way most people operate. Human nature is, we don't usually see beyond our current circumstance. Or even if we see a little bit beyond them, it's not far beyond it. So what David HaMelech is really describing is something that goes counter to just basic human behavior. What David HaMelech is charging us with is, V'ani bechastecha batachti. A person has to believe that everything is going to be okay. I have to believe that. That's the job of a Jew. I have to believe that everything is going to be okay. But it's not enough just to believe it. Yogel libi b'shuasecha. I have to rejoice in the salvation. How? Ashur Hashem ki gamal alai. As if I've already experienced it. I have to be so confident that things are going to be okay that I somehow have to reach into the future, bring back a little bit of that koach to my present, and invigorate my present with the knowledge of future salvation. Is it easy? No, we just saw why it's not easy. Because it flies in the face of what for most of us is the default human behavior position of not being able to see beyond our circumstances. But then again, that's why we come to learn together 9:15 on Wednesday mornings. Right? To learn from David HaMelech how to live better lives than the ones we are currently living. Nothing that David HaMelech describes here in Sefer Tehillim is easy. None of it is easy. What David HaMelech is just telling us is it's attainable. It's possible. It's possible to become the kind of person that our grandparents in Egypt were not. It's possible to become the kind of person who is able to draw present chizuk from the knowledge of future salvation. Okay, so now, to take this one step further, just in the couple of moments that we have left, look at the Malbim in number 9. So the Malbim here says something amazing. So David HaMelech says in this last pasuk, "Vani bechastecha batachti, yagel libi bishuasecha." So he writes over here the following: "Geder hagil shesamach al davar tov shelo kava alav meolam." Ubisura tova pit omis. Al pisa, apirusha, yomar, shahagam shani batachti bechastacha, ad shatishua eno dober chodosh etli ki batachti alze, mikomakum yageli bibishua secha, kisha samach al dober shalokava alav. See, here's what's interesting. Let's work on definitions for just a moment. So the Malbim says the definition of this word, yagel. Yagel, ani bechastecha batachti, yagel libi b'shuasecha. Now the translation over here is rejoice, rejoice. So, but Malbim says yagel gila, gila means to rejoice over something that I did not expect. Right? There's simcha in life where I'm happy. I expected this to occur, and I'm happy it occurred, but it's expected. Gila refers to joy, as the Malbim says, from davar pit omit, from something that was totally unexpected, from something that just, or something that I didn't even know it was going to occur. So according to the Malbim, v'ani bechastecha batachti, listen to how this reads. I trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what? What do I trust in? It's going to be good. Yagel libi b'shuasecha. But you know what's amazing? Sometimes, things that I never expected come about. Gila. Gila, sometimes the way that I thought it would occur is not exactly how it would occur. Ashira la Hashem ki gamal alai. The Malbim goes on to explain, gamal, lashon gemul, comes from something that is magiali, something that I am entitled to. In life, there are things that we get because we feel we are entitled to it. And then there are other things that occur that we didn't really think we're entitled to, but just happened and we're thankful for them happening. So watch this. Watch this. According to the Malbim, you know what's unfolding over here? I'll give you just an illustration of this. Take a look at number 10 for just a moment. We'll bring this all together. Number 10 is from last week's parasha, right? Yaakov finds out that Yosef is alive, goes down to Mitzrayim. Torah tells us about the incredible encounter. Vayezer Yosef Merkavto, Vayalik Ras Yisrael Aviv Goshna. So Yosef, he harnesses his own chariot. He goes to greet his father. Vayiralov, he appears to him. Vayipo al tzavarov vayev. And he fell on his father's neck and he cried, Vayevch al tzavarov od. And he cried excessively on his father's neck. Vayomri Yisrael, Yosef, Amusa hapam, achari ro'osi es panecha ki otcha chai. And Yaakov Inu says, I'm ready to die. I'm ready to die because now I saw that you're alive. So there are a couple of questions with this. The most basic question is what? All the Mefarshim ask. What? I'm sorry? Why did he want to die? Good, good, that's the second. Good. What's the other question? More pressure question. Why isn't Yaakov crying? Why isn't Yaakov crying? Right? Yaakov should be crying. Now, you should just know, just as an aside, the Ramban says that it was Yaakov who was crying and not Yosef. Not Yosef. But leaving aside the Ramban, why is it that just Yosef is crying and Yaakov is not crying? And perhaps on a greater meta level, why is this here? I mean, you have to understand, Torah is not a storybook. So whenever there's a story that is included, the story is only there for its moral, ethical imperative. So what is it exactly that's learned from this particular exchange? And again, the follow-up question is, why does Yaakov feel the need to die now? So look at Rav Hirsch. There are a number of answers to this. I'm just showing one for illustration purposes because it fits into our theme. Rav Hirsch writes, Joseph wept, Jacob did not. Yosef could still weep. Yaakov was finished with weeping. He had wept enough in his life. Yosef was still weeping oath even after Jacob had already spoken to him. In such small points, the actual truth is mirrored. Since he had missed Joseph, Jacob had a dull, monotonous life, had not ceased from weeping. His whole life of feelings had been spent in grief over Joseph. In the meantime, Yosef had lived a life full of changes, had no time to give himself up so much to the pain of separation. He was kept fully occupied with each of his different posts. Now when he fell around his father's neck again, he felt more what the separation had really meant to him, and lived once again through the past 20 years. Yaakov had already become Israel. Yosef still wept. So if Hirsch says something profound here, Yaakov Avinu didn't cry, you know why? There were no more tears. There were no more tears. Because he was crying each and every day for the last 22 years. So the well had run dry. Yosef had never allowed himself the luxury of crying. Why? Because Yosef had to put his life together. Yosef didn't have time to cry. Yosef had to try to figure out, how am I going to put this whole thing together in this brave new world that I did not ask to be a part of? So says Rav Hirsch, you know what's unfolding over here is something absolutely amazing. The circle closes. The father, who had wept for the last 22 years, doesn't cry because he's done his crying. The son, who has never had the opportunity to, because you know, crying is a wonderful opportunity. Crying is quite cleansing and cathartic. So Yosef, who never had the time to cry, now allows himself the luxury of crying. So why is this episode here? So I think on a very simple level, you know what this episode teaches us? At the end of the day, everything works out. The greatest challenge in life is how. Sometimes it works out in the way we expected it, sometimes in an unexpected fashion. Sometimes it works out the way we wanted it. Sometimes it's not exactly the way that we had planned. But everything always comes full circle. Father and son get to spend their remaining days together. Was it the way they had planned? Of course not. Was it what they expected? Of course not. Was it what either one of them would have wanted? I would have to assume not. Neither of them bargained for spending more than 2 decades apart. But at the end of the day, in that moment of crying, Yaakov finishes his crying, Yosef begins his crying, and everything falls into place. And that's what David HaMelech is saying in his last kapitel. V'ani bechastecha batachti. If there's one thing David HaMelech says, I know for sure, is everything will work out. Everything always works out. But you know, Yagel libi bishuasecha. What does Yagel mean? Yagel means what according to the Malbim? Yagel. Joy. Unexpected joy. Yagel libi bishuasecha. But David HaMelech said, Kishbaruch, you know what? I know it will work out, but I have no idea what to expect. Yagel libi bishuasecha. It's going to be gila. How it's going to turn out, what it's going to be, how it's going to fall into place, I have no idea. Ashur el Hashem ki gamal alai. Gamal means what? Gamal means what? Excellent. He gave me what I expected. So David HaMelech is saying, here's what I know. At the end of the day, it'll always work out. Will it be Yageli Bibishuasecha? Will it be Gila? Will it be something unexpected? Or will it be ki gamal alai? Will it be what I expect? That I have no idea. This is the great variable of life. We have the bitachon, David HaMelech says, that as individuals and as a nation, everything always works out. Everything falls into place. There is always for each of us in our personal and national lives that Yaakov Yosef rendezvous, when all of the broken pieces of existence somehow coalesce to form one cohesive unit. How those circumstances arise, will they be gila moments of unexpected circumstances, or will they be gmul moments, gamal moments of where everything falls into place exactly as I planned? That I don't know. That's the great variable of life. Will it be the unexpected resolution or the expected resolution? That only time will tell. But David HaMelech says one thing that we must rest sure of when we put our head on the pillow at night, It all comes together in the end. It's just a question of how. All right, we'll stop over here.